Welcome to episode 294 of the Ski Podcast, and thanks for joining us, listener. I'm your host, Ian Martin, and today we're going to be finding out about Sausalito and the wider Via Latia ski area that it sits in, as well as the resort of Pralu in the southern French Alps. As well as that, we're going to get excited about the Olympics and look at not just Team GB's chances, but we're also going down under to look at Australia's chances of bringing home a record medal haul. Plus, we have your feedback and our regular snow reports from around the mountains. Now, before we meet today's guests, I'd like to thank Tyrol Austria for sponsoring the Ski Podcast and making this winter's episodes possible. If this is your first time listening, I strongly recommend you catch up with some of the great conversations we've already had about Tyrol this winter. Whether you want to know about Innsbruck or Ischgl, the Ski Welt or Surfhaus, and plenty more in between, it's all in our back catalogue to catch up with. I've really enjoyed this series of episodes and finding out more about an area I thought I knew pretty well already. Right, let's meet today's guests. Now, my first is James and Sinead from Sausy Online. Let's start with you, Sinead. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks, Ian.
Now, you and James are sitting in the same room but on different audio feeds and different laptops, but you run the business together. And where are you just now?
We're in our apartment in Savoulx, close to Sausalito.
Oh, and can you see any snow out of the windows? Is it that type of place?
We can. It's sunny today, but we're looking out at the mountains that are covered in snow currently.
I'm going to turn to James now, sitting next to you, but on a different part of my screen. Regular listeners will know your voice because you've very kindly given us several snow reports this season. And how are you, James?
I'm very well, thank you, Ian. Yes, not too bad at all.
We met previously at the London Ski Show. We're going to talk about that later. Let's turn to my third guest for today. Mike the Snow Richards will be well known to our listeners. He has been on the podcast many times before, covering destinations as diverse as Japan, Bosnia, Turkey, Medissimo, North Macedonia. Hi, Mike. How are you?
Good morning, Ian. Great to be back on the show. Yeah, fantastic. Thanks. Calling in from very, very wet Cardiff, but we could mean we might get a little bit of snow up in the Brecon Beacons.
Well, actually, the last time you were on, we were talking about skiing in Wales, and I always enjoy hearing about that. I can't remember if we covered this last time, but you were on Sky TV a little while ago talking about skiing in Wales, weren't you?
Yeah, I was very fortunate. I had about 4 minutes on Sky. I had more than the football, so that was a big result for me.
Cool. Well, let me ask a question I always ask to my guests, which is, when did you ski or snowboard last? Sinead, when was that for you?
It was yesterday. We were skiing in Bardonecchia, which is just down the road from where we live. Really great day. There was no snow in the forecast, but it actually was snowing pretty much all day. So really great day over in Bardi yesterday.
And James, you were out there as well. What was the snow like underfoot?
Fantastic, Ian. Really, really good. As Sinead says, I mean, we had snow, which was not in the forecast. We were skiing corduroy piece with about 5-10 centimetres of fresh snow on top in the morning, which was absolutely superb. As you can imagine, that sort of did lump up a bit in the afternoon. So for those who like a bit of bumpy skiing, it was fantastic. And the off-piste, some great lines underneath the chairlifts. So all in all, a fantastic day.
And Mike, what about yourself? When were you last on snow? I know you tend to fit in a lot more than the average person's number of ski trips during a season.
Last Sunday, Ian, I was very fortunate to be in Crum, Montana for the FIS Alpine World Cup, the last speed races before the Winter Olympics in Milano Cortina. We had Friday was a big day of snow, unfortunately cancelled the women's downhill. Then we had 2 days of great sunshine Saturday and Sunday. Fantastic competition. Both winners were of the women's Super G and the men's downhill were Swiss. So the Swiss crowd were very, very happy. And the snow that we had on Friday provided boot top powder all over the mountain. It was great.
Right. Well, I've got to bring this up now. It is something that comes up, you know, lower down in the running order. But you were in Crum, Montana. Yeah, the major talking point was Lindsey Vonn's crash. Were you watching the downhill at that time?
Yeah, I was at the bottom. Thankfully, we had press passes, so we were right in the pit. You could see the emotion from the US team. Obviously devastated. She was the pre-race favorite, and she was coming in hot. She was at least a half a second ahead of her teammate who was leading at that time. And then like three other or two other people, there were three in total of the first six that were coming down the mountain. She went sideways into the barriers. Looks like she twisted her knee, and subsequently she said that she's ruptured her ACL, but with a little bit bionics and strapping, it looks like she's still going to go for it in the Olympics.
To a certain degree, that's insane. I've had a lot of conversations. I've done so many interviews in relation to the Olympics, but I spoke to Graham Bell on the day of the accident, and then I spoke to Emily yesterday. I've got other interviews coming up that it's entirely possible I'll be dropping something into this episode a little bit later on. But certainly her determination is absolutely incredible. You know, she's ruptured her ACL and that she is going to race. And I think that most people in the same circumstances would. But yes, she was a clear favourite for sure. And, you know, now, well, I think it's just a must-view event. It probably would have been anyway on Sunday morning, the women's downhill.
And the big thing is that she's one of these athletes that's transcended her own sport. So it's a really important watch. And if she does take part, it's a really important part of the Olympic Games, because casual watchers will definitely tune in.
Yeah, absolutely. It's such a story. Right, we'll come back to the Olympics a little bit later on. But you mentioned the snow. Great to hear that there's been fresh snow. We do have a few other snow reports from around the mountains. Claire Harrison reports from the Aosta Valley. Alex Armand from Tip Top Ski Coaching reports from Les Dés Alpes. Jim Duncan, co-founder of the podcast, is out in La Clusa.
Hello, buongiorno, Ian and Ski Podcast listeners. This is Claire Harrison reporting in from La Tuila on the Italian side of the Espa San Bernardo ski area in the Valle d'Aosta. Well, we are enjoying some really quite fabulous conditions at the moment. We had a pretty good base already down in January of about a metre and a half up on the mountain. But over the last week or so, there's been further snowfall of about 20 centimetres, which has really refreshed. Of course, with the snowfall, there have been some days of poorer visibility, low cloud and some very cold temperatures with some biting winds, particularly on the Chardura side in that higher lift, if you're unlucky enough to be on it at certain times of the day. But that said, we have had a number of wonderful bluebird days, brilliant blue skies and views all the way to Mont Blanc, snow as far as the eye can see. We've had about 10 centimetres of snow overnight, and it's snowing at the moment. So for now, the powder just keeps on coming, and we have further snow forecast for the rest of the week. So if you fancy some great skiing, great Italian food, hop on over to La Tuila, because I promise that you won't be disappointed. Arrivederci, Ian, Ski Podcast listeners, and ski safely.
Hi, this is Alex from Tip Top Ski Coaching, live here in Les Dés Alpes. The sun's just come out after a big snowstorm overnight and first thing this morning. We've had high winds, so the avalanche risk is 4 out of 5 today. And there are some delayed openings this morning. It's due to be nice weather the next few days, and then the next snowstorm is coming in later in the week. So it's looking good for February half term. The long term forecast is snow for next week as well, although that's a little bit far ahead for us to be sure. So lots of snow on the ground, lots of snowstorms coming in 2-3 times a week at the moment, followed by blue skies and sunshine and perfect soft pistes, and lots of fresh powder to be taken very carefully as there are lots of wind slabs around.
Jim, digital editor for Full Line Skiing here. Ian's asked me for a snow report from Grand-Bornand and the Clusa. Unfortunately, I've been very busy this week working and have definitely not spent any time skiing whatsoever. So I asked a friend. He says the snow is the best it's been all season. Everything is open, covered and skiing like a dream. Early in the week, he got a full day of hero pieces in Grand-Bornand. Apparently, they had the kind of snow that makes every skier feel like an absolute legend. Very gutted I missed out on that. La Clusa is currently hosting the European Freestyle Champs and the park looks like it's in tip-top shape for that. Annoyingly, as I definitely haven't been skiing in the Clusa at all this week, I'll have to base my reports on what I can see on webcams. And by the looks of it, the conditions are pretty special. Runs at Norney Artificial and Scraped are all natural and enjoyable. High up in the Balm area, the free ride has been bashed down by the weekend crowd after a snowy start last weekend. Now it's still soft, it's still chalky, perfect for messing around on the train, and the pieces are wicked. But what would I know? I'm busy, definitely not skiing. If I had been on the slopes, I'd probably say the temperature is fluctuating a little bit, creating some wetter snow low down, and there's a bit of crust on any off piece that was left over. A forecast, if I were a meteorologist, which I'm not, but I would go and say that Friday is looking quite snowy. Snow line could be quite high, definitely higher than 1,000 meters. But whatever comes is going to set up us up perfectly for February and the busy period.
We actually have one more snow report from regular contributor Bethany Garner. Bethany is out in Livigno right now working for Team GB. So let's hear what conditions are like just now.
Hi Ian, it's Bethany calling in a snow report from the very snowy Olympic resort of Livigno in Italy. I'm lucky enough to be out here just ahead of the games, getting ready to watch our GB athletes in action. And so what can I tell you? Well, it snowed about 20 centimetres on Tuesday, and on Wednesday today it's snowing again. And I reckon already another 10 centimetres has fallen. So yeah, anybody who's here skiing for themselves is going to be having a great time in the powder. And contrary to popular belief, the resort is open for general skiing during the games. So that's good news for anyone wanting to make some turns. And then in terms of the competition venues, they look amazing. I'm actually looking as we speak at the Big Air, the Pipe, the Slopestyle course, the snowboard and ski cross course. And they look Olympic standard, shall we say. And then just the other side of Livigno, you've got the Moguls and Aerials. I haven't seen those yet, but hopefully soon. So, yeah, I think Livigno is looking very wintry, very snowy, and very ready for a Winter Olympics. I'll speak to you soon. Ciao.
Yeah, Bethany recorded that yesterday. I happened to read this morning that the first training for the women's downhill was cancelled. So Lindsay Vonn didn't get the opportunity to try out her knee in practice, although I know she's been on the mountain. As you're listening to the podcast, you must know the Milan Cortina Winter Olympics start on Friday. That's tomorrow for us. We're actually recording on Thursday. If you're one of our sensible listeners who subscribe to the podcast, you will have already listened to or have downloaded the first of our special Olympic episodes that was released yesterday, Wednesday. I'm not going to cover everything we included in there other than to say that my co-host on all the episodes is Emily Sarsfield, who many listeners will know competed for Team GB in the ski across at Pyeongchang 2018. In each episode, we will review all the recent action, we'll look ahead to what's coming up. There'll be a definite focus on Team GB, but we'll be covering all of the big stories, including contributions from lots of the competitors and commentators in each episode. Yesterday's episode featured Graham Bell's predictions for the men and women's downhill, and of course, all the news that we discussed there about Lindsay Vonn.
Shortly after we finished recording this podcast, I was lucky enough to have the opportunity to speak to Eddie the Eagle Edwards in a wide-ranging interview that I'm going to be publishing later on. But I asked him while we were together whether he saw any of the determination that he showed in Calgary in 1988 coming through with Lindsay Vonn and her decision to keep racing.
Finally, can I ask you about Lindsay Vonn? I'm sure you know she has confirmed that she plans to race in the women's downhill on Sunday, despite rupturing her ACL last Friday. Now, you know, I realise she's a multiple Olympic medalist, but do you see something of the determination that you brought to the Games, you know, pressing ahead despite all the odds being against you there?
Oh, absolutely. And I wish her all the best. I thought when I read that story, I thought that's it. She's not going to be at the Olympic Games. It's, you know, career over, really. But to hear that she's actually going to try and compete with a ruptured, you know, ligament in her knee, especially in the downhill, which is so fast and furious and you have to be so powerful. I hope that, you know, she actually survives the run in the first place. If she does well or even wins, I mean, that would just be incredible.
I really enjoyed chatting with Eddie, and I highly recommend that you listen to the podcast, a special episode when I bring it out. Just make sure you subscribe and you won't miss it. It'll be sometime in the next week.
As well as Graham Bell, I spoke to Ed Lee in yesterday's podcast, and I had the opportunity to speak with another friend of the show, Rachel Oakes-Ash, the expert on skiing in Australia and New Zealand. Rachel is in Lavinio reporting for her website, snowsbest.com. And I spoke to her about the chances of Australia improving on their 4 medals on snow last time round in Beijing. Delighted to be joined today by Rachel Oakes-Ash. Regular listeners will know her voice. She's been on the podcast many times before. She is an Australian expert. She was last on the podcast in episode 250, and you would have heard her with her summer snow reports or winter snow reports for the Southern Hemisphere. Hi, Rachel. How are you?
Hey, Ian. I'm actually great because I'm in Lavinio.
And when did you get there?
Oh, I got here yesterday, actually. So I've been here 24 hours. I've already got a hangover, so it's all good.
You were at the Pyeongchang Olympics.
Yes, I was.
As well. Yeah. Any sense yet as to how this compares with those games?
Oh, it's very different. It's exceptionally different. First of all, we can ski here. When we were press in Pyeongchang, they had shut the actual mountains, so you couldn't ski unless you were like an official, like a judge or something, and then they'd allow you to ski. So here in Lavinio, which they call the Little Tibet of Italy, you know, you can ski wherever you like, so long as you've got a lift pass. It's spectacular. It's really beautiful.
Most of our listeners are in the UK, so we do focus on Team GB. And I think that many of our global listeners are often surprised by the fact that we have in the UK world-class snow sport athletes. But Australia is another outlier from those big alpine nations, probably better known for its beaches. Australia does have ski resorts, but I think people are often surprised to discover the depth of snow sport talent. Yeah. I wondered if we could tap into your knowledge and get a sense for, you know, who the potential Australian medalists might be.
Oh, we have so many. So many of our athletes are just on point and on peak at the moment.
So looking at some of the top medal prospects then, moguls is a really strong discipline, and you've got male and female chances for a medal there.
Yeah, we do. We have Matt Graham. This will be his last Olympics. I think it's his fourth or his fifth. I can't quite remember. Matty Graham is a rock star, and he is 100% on points this season. He has hit the podium numerous times in the FIS World Cup. He's a young dad. He's got married and had a baby in the last, you know, 18 months. He was part of the first official dad podium at the FIS World Cup with Mikkel Kingsbury and Akuma, which was just sensational. He's a definite favourite. And Jakara is going to hopefully defend her gold. She has just broken every record there is for female mogul skiers in the world, really.
You mentioned that Matt Graham is a new dad. If listeners have been watching BBC Ski Sunday, they'll have seen an interview with Scotty James. Now, he is another medal prospect, snowboard halfpipe. He's also a new father.
He has a fantastic documentary on Netflix called Pipe Dreams, which you have to watch. Like, it is... I mean, obviously it's curated within an inch of its produced life, but you fall into it and you buy into it and you believe it and you cry. Like I cried. I cried like four times in that documentary. He's going for gold. This is his last chance. He's going for gold. He's won X Games gold. He's won LAX gold. He's broken records at X Games in the number of podiums, broken records at the LAX as well. He's a four-time world champion. He is on fire.
Those are three great medal chances, all got a chance of gold. As far as Team GB is concerned, we don't really have any strong competitors in those categories. But moving on to ones where we do have medal chances, Josie Baff is snowboard cross. Mm-hmm. Now, Charlotte Banks is a strong medal prospect, yes, for us, so she'd be up against her. Can you tell us a little bit about Josie?
So Josie and Adam Lambert as well, they're both brought across to Australia. They both had the yellow bib, the second to last FIS World Cup. Adam retained it. Josie sits number two, I think perhaps behind Charlotte, actually. So they're both big contenders. And yes, we'll be up there against Team GB for sure. And the course here is phenomenal. Like, it actually, interestingly enough, I met the engineer of the course last night in a bar downtown Lavinio. He said the snow is a little slow.
It's still relatively early on because those events aren't for a while, so conditions could change. But that's certainly interesting. I love the fact that the way Lavinio can work is that you can bump into the designer of the snowboard across the park just in a bar. There's one other athlete I wanted to cover as well. Also interesting because she will be competing against Zoe Atkin, who's a great chance for a medal in the ski halfpipe. But also because she is a very young athlete to be taking part at the Olympic Games, and that's Indra Brown.
Indra Brown is a once-in-a-generation athlete. She is phenomenal. She's 15, she's 16 now, but she was 15 on her maiden FIS World Cup season, which is this one just gone. Many of us journos had actually booked our flights out of Livigno before the free ski half pipe because Indra wasn't even on the radar when the time we booked our flights, right? And now she's come in, she's won bronze, silver, gold in that order from four starts on the FIS World Cup, and she just won X Games silver. And she's 16, like unbelievable. She's definitely another medal contender for us.
As you say, that one is going to be right at the end because I think that is on the day before the closing ceremony.
Yeah, it is.
They're both, Zoe Atkin and Indra Ran, up against Eileen Gu as well. And yep. She has been pretty dominant in the ski half pipe. But you never know. You mentioned, the snowboard cross. That is quite a random event. You do get several runs in the half pipe. But, we will be following for sure.
Can I just say the way they've set up the snow park here, you can see that big air from wherever you were standing, wherever you were walking. It is part of the village. It's a real buzz. It has really elevated the Winter Olympics.
That is brilliant, Rachel. I really appreciate that insight into the Australian side of things. And, hopefully we can get an update during the games if and when Australia brings more medals.
Oh, look, I'd love to keep chatting because it really is, there's so much to talk about when it comes to the Winter Olympics.
Exactly. That's brilliant, Rachel. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Right, let's turn to you, James and Sinead. Firstly, will you be avidly watching the Winter Olympics? It is in the same country as you're based.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Yeah. Massive Olympic fans, yeah. So, and it's 20 years since we actually had the Olympics. 2006, it was held in Turin. Really looking forward to the Olympic action.
So you mentioned 2006. Let's just start straight away by asking how long the two of you have been based out in Sanzidu and the Via Lattea.
Well, I first came to the area back in 2008, and that was actually to Bardonecchia. I did three seasons repping there for Nielsen, and that's when James and I met. And then 10 years ago, I then joined James in Sauzy, so running our business Sauzy Online. Your history with the region runs back a bit later than that, doesn't it, James?
I'm a little bit older. So I first came out in 1988. My first season was 88-89. It was the year that we had absolutely no snow whatsoever. Bit of a challenging one, but still had a fantastic time. Ended up doing six seasons, just ski bumming, just, picking up work wherever I could. That actually led to me becoming qualified as an instructor. I then went off and worked in Austria for a few seasons, did seasons down in Australia and New Zealand, but then came back to, set Sauzy Online up 20 years ago. Just before the Winter Olympics of 2006, I set the website up. Yeah, it gained enough momentum. I was still working back home in Yorkshire at the time, but it gained enough momentum by 2009 for me to jack the job back. Back in the UK, jack that in, and then come back out full time. And we've been here. Well, I've been here ever since.
I love that story. It resonates with me in particular because my first ski season was also 88-89.
Oh, really?
I was working in Châtel in the Port du Soleil for Bladen Lines as a rep. And you mentioned it was a poor season, and I can't remember who I was saying this to the other day. But it was so poor by the end of the season. I was like a ski guide in the days when you could do that. We were taking people mountain biking instead of skiing because the snow was so bad. And in the last week of the season, Bladen Lines gave the guests the option to go to Verbier if they wanted to instead of Châtel. And most of them took that option. We had 30 staff in Châtel. It was we had a couple of club hotels. We ended up with 30 guests who chose not to go to Verbier. And it snowed on the Saturday night. And we got this massive dump of snow, right at the end of the season with a ratio of like one staff member to one guest. So we all had loads of time off and got to skate in the powder right at the end of the season. So
similar thing happened to us. As soon as officially the lift shut, we had about a metre and a half of snow. We couldn't believe it. That's living in the mountains for you.
Yeah, and you did a lot of seasons. So let's specifically discuss Sauzy Online then. You set up that website. And so tell us, what it does. You're not a tour operator as such, or are you offering lots of services in relation to the Via Lattea?
Correct. We're not a tour operator. The main driving force behind the website initially was to help independent travellers first of all, discover the area, and then also book, plan their trips to Sousey. So we started off by offering ski hire via the website. That quickly included ski school as well, and also airport transfers. Yeah, currently we're offering accommodation as well. So you can build your holiday through the website, or you can just jump on it and find out the latest snow conditions. It's a source for everything.
Yeah, I mean, we've been very grateful to have your snow report. You have excellent YouTube channel with lots of coverage in there. Very detailed, covering the whole of the Via Latia. And I think at this point, it might be useful just to help listeners understand, evidently, you're near to Turin. Some of the Olympic events in 2006 were held there. But if people aren't familiar, Via Latia is the Italian translation. I think historically, people used to talk about the Milky Way a lot. I don't know if the Milky Way is still one of the accepted terms, but they both mean the same thing. So where is the Via Latia, the Milky Way?
Like you say, the Via Latia and the Milky Way are located just an hour from Turin, so nice, easy transfer. We're in the northwest of Italy, close to the French border. In fact, you can actually ski into France. And one of the resorts in the region is Montgenèvre, which is part of the Via Latia. The Italian resorts are Sousey. Probably a bit better known is Sestriere, that's on the World Cup circuit. And then we also have San Sicario, Claviere and Cesana. So a nice big ski area. And then we've mentioned a couple of times, just 20 minutes down the road, also the region of Bardonecchia.
Just to give us a sense of the size of that area then, how many kilometres of piste might be able to access in the Via Latia?
So the Via Latia is advertised at 400 kilometres, with Bardonecchia an extra 100. So the region as a total, sort of 500 kilometres. And if people come out to the region for a week and get the 6-day ski pass, they get every day in the Italian resorts plus one day sort of extension in Montgenèvre in France and also one day in Bardonecchia. So quite a nice option for a week's ski trip.
And you mentioned Bardonecchia several times. It's not in the Via Latia, but I think we might as well tackle this now. I really only know this because you told me about it prior to the recording. But there's actually a single UK company that owns the lift systems in the Via Latia and Bardonecchia. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct, Ian. Yeah, in 2022, Icon Infrastructure bought the holding company that owns the Via Latia lift system. And then 2 years after that, they followed that up with buying the Bardonecchia lift system as well. So it is a UK-based business. They have a footprint across the world, though. They're a massive company that invest in infrastructure-based companies. So, yeah, it's exciting times. Their sort of MO, if you like, is to generally improve the operations of the business, to help the businesses grow and add value, essentially.
Interesting. I mean, until you mentioned it the other day, I kind of maybe was aware of that on the periphery of my knowledge, but I looked into it a little bit and I noticed that they're running a shuttle between Sousey, I think it is, and Bardonecchia, maybe just over the next month or so. Is that right?
They're running it from Thursday through to Sunday. So it's not an everyday bus service. We also actually run a bus service on a Wednesday over to Bardonecchia. I mean, I think it's fantastic that Via Latia are putting on that free bus. Absolutely. But what we offer on the Wednesday is slightly different than just a bus service, if you like. So, but it's only 20 odd minutes down the road. So it's easily accessible.
Oh, okay. Well, let's focus a little bit more on Sousey because that's where you're based. Now, I have been there before. Well, I was trying to work out when it was. I reckon I was probably only about 9 at the time. I could not really remember anything about it other than we had a tiny room and we got told off for taking too much breakfast off the table for our packed lunches. can you give us a sense for what Sousey is like? Because Parna has maybe a reputation. I have no idea whether it's unfair or dated or not, for being a bit of a party destination.
It certainly did. I mean, my first season was 1988. I was 20 years old and I was reveling in that that après atmosphere. It was absolutely fantastic. But there was 2,000 Brits coming out every week then. And it has changed. It has changed considerably. I'm not the only one who's matured. Sousy's matured as well. There's more cozy wine bars available. When I first came out, there was 6 nightclubs. There's not a single nightclub now. There are bars that you can drink in until 3-4 o'clock in the morning if you so desire. But I would say, on a whole, it has shed that crazy sort of reputation, which I must say was fueled a lot by the British press, unfairly to a certain extent, but it still has that reputation, unfortunately. But hopefully we're moving away from that. Well, since I've been here since 2009, my second stint here, I've noticed a massive difference.
Yeah, it's interesting. Sometimes these kind of, legacy ideas can be hard to shed. Mm. But how about you tell us a little bit about the ski area then? What if someone was going to Sousy? We're already aware now that the Via Latia, you've got a big ski area across all of the different resorts. In terms of like Sousy itself and the area, what kind of skiing is it offering? Who would you think it would be suitable for?
Definitely intermediates. We've got some, majority of the runs are cruisy rolling reds, a lot of them through the trees, so you get some beautiful tree line runs. We do have some high altitude skiing as well, moreover in Sestriere, and certainly at the top of the Banqueta side of Sestriere, you've got the men's Olympic downhill from 2006, so you've got some challenging runs. You've got the Giovanni Alberto Agnelli run in Sestriere, which was the Dizza floodlit piste, and they still use that actually in the women's World Cup circuit.
This time last year, we saw Michaela Schifrin winning her 100th World Cup in Sestriere, didn't we, on that piste, which was fantastic.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. So there's some tough pistes over in Sestriere, certainly in Sousy as well. You've got the Fratevi Mountain, which offers a couple of blacks and some nice free ride opportunities as well. But I would say the majority of the runs are aimed at the intermediate skier.
Cool. And you mentioned that you can help people find accommodation. I'm imagining that it's not lots of big apartment blocks. It's probably smaller family hotels, pensions. What kind of accommodation can people book there?
Yeah, there's a mixture of sort of hotels and B&Bs, and also not huge apartment blocks, but lots of nice sort of cozy apartments as well. Not really chalets. Italy sort of is lacking a little bit in the sort of chalet offering, but certainly a nice mix of sort of family run hotels and B&Bs and apartments.
Oh, and Italy is known for its food. Is that something that visitors would notice?
Absolutely. Lots of people comment to us that they really love the food, especially the sort of great value mountain restaurants. You can have a pizza, pasta, polenta dish up the mountain with a glass of wine and, you know, sort of not break the bank, which is nice.
Yeah, the wine is, well, we're 2 hours from the Langhe Hills, where you get Barolo, Barbaresco, Nebbiolo. So we've got some big hitting wines, and the locals are very passionate about their wine. So you can sit down, as Sinead says, have a fantastic meal and be educated in the Italian wine as well. It's great value for money.
Oh, well, you mentioned value for money. I know we've kind of moved beyond necessarily just a plate of spaghetti bolognese, but as the kind of big Big Mac of mountain restaurants. Any idea how much that would cost?
Well, I think you could easily get, let's go for a slice of pizza and a bowl of chips, for example. Yeah, I mean, with a Coca-Cola, you're looking at about 10 euros.
€10 for a pizza and chips and a Coke?
Yeah, and also Bianco, yeah, mm-hmm. €10 for, yeah, you can get a slice of pizza, some chips and a Coke for €10, yeah.
And then if you're looking at, say, a bowl of pasta and a glass of wine and water for €20, I'd say.
Yeah, well, I think there'll be people listening to this who are kind of fainting. My daughter's out doing a season in Courchevel, and she paid €12 for a hot chocolate at one point. That underlines the value for money that it offers.
Yeah, all for those who love their morning coffee, a typical Italian espresso for about €1.50. Your cappuccino is going to cost you about €2. So yeah, €2.50 for a cappuccino. So yeah, it is great value for money.
Well, you've evidently been out there for a long time and running the business for a long time, so you must be doing a good job. It was actually a listener who suggested I contact you in the first place. And, you know, shortly after that, we bumped into each other at the London Snow Show. As an aside, how you found the show, what your impressions were of it.
That was our second year we'd been at the show. So we were at XL the year before. Well, we thoroughly enjoyed it. We've actually booked again to go next year. So it must have done something right. It was great to not only meet face-to-face potential customers and also existing customers, but also network, you know, with people like yourself and others that we met at the show. So for the snow industry, I think it's fantastic.
Evidently, if anyone did talk to you, they'd soon find out that your knowledge of the area is extremely good, and that maybe some of the impressions they possibly had of Sousey could be well off the track. And I think probably you should take a photo of like the mountain restaurant's menu or something to get people to understand exactly how much they could save when they go over there. That's brilliant, James and Sinead. Thank you so much for that. If it's okay with you, I'm going to turn to Mike now. Mike, I know you said you haven't been to Sousey Dee. I'm guessing you must have skied somewhere in the Via Lattea, the Milky Way ski area.
Just on the southern edge there in Montgenèvre. I was on a little bit of a road trip up from a friend's house in Nice, and we stopped there first, then went to Le Grave and finished up in Le Desalpes. So yeah, the area, so much skiing, beautiful, wide open valleys and really high peaks. It's fantastic.
Oh, well, you were last on the show when you shared a snow report from Wales in episode 272. And we said, hopefully, you're going to get out there onto the hills again. Your previous snow report was in our special Christmas episode when you made everyone jealous by reporting on heavy snowfall in Pralu, where at the time, I don't think anyone else was getting any snowfall at all. When were you actually out in Pralu?
So I was out from the 13th to the 19th of December, just before Christmas, working as a representative for the school ski company Equity. And I had a group from Merthyr, which is next to my own home valley of Aberdare, 19 students and three teachers. We flew into Turin and flew out of Marseille, but typically the better connection would be coming in and out of Marseille. That was just because of connections and logistics. It's actually not a million miles from where James and Sinead are coming. So they're coming in for a tour in, and we did the same. And instead of going down and then up into the valleys, we carried on going down south towards the coast. We passed through Montgenèvre, then keep on going down and you get close to the area of Gap and that sort of place. And then you kick up into the mountains.
Right. Interesting. I'm actually going on Sunday to Nice to go and ski in Isola 2000. Another resort that's probably even further south than that. You're a very experienced skier. You've been on the show lots of times before. I wonder what you thought of the ski area in Pralu.
Well, I mean, initially, we couldn't go too far because obviously I was there for a role. I wasn't just playing. So we had to get the two groups of students set up. And then myself and the three teachers then would ski around and make sure that the groups were working well. But it's one of these weird places where it's a very compact, efficient area, but it's massive at the same time. So you can cover a lot of distance and you don't need too many lifts. There's only three lifts you need to get to the top of the system on the Pralu side. So we kind of spent the first couple of days with them. And then when you get to the top of the mountain, you're kind of looking at the next valley and the valley beyond it. And there's a lot of extended skiing, but you've really got to set yourself the day to explore beyond that. But luckily, of the 180 kilometers that's in the Espace Lumière, 100 is based in Pralu itself. So you don't really need to leave the Pralu area. To be honest, myself and one of the teachers, Reese, we only went over to the next valley once because we had a little bit of time once the students were up and running and in the groove with their groups.
I know that normally you like to get ski touring, get into the backcountry. It sounds like maybe there wasn't an opportunity on this trip, but did you see possibilities that might be there for a future visit?
Well, since COVID, you know, a lot of resorts have really embraced, they've had to embrace the fact that a lot of people are doing more ski touring. So actually Pralu itself has got three up tracks graded in the same way as you do coming downhill, which is they've got a green up track, they've got a blue up track, a red up track and a black up track, depending how much challenge you want. Some people are doing it just for the up. Most people are doing it for the up and the down, and they kind of work their way through the forest because the terrain is fantastic. It's a lot of high alpine skiing, but there's also a lot of tree-lined runs and skiing within the trees. So when you're going up by chair, you're kind of protected, and also when you're skinning up to get to the mountain doing the ski touring, whether it's for exercise or for the sport at the end of it, you're kind of protected from the weather. From the top of the mountain, it's a tricky little T-bar sort of button lift that gets you to the top of the Pralu system. that gives you access into the next valley. But from there, it's all ridgeline traversing and just drop in and ski whatever you can see. And it all funnels back to the lift system. So it's a real nice big open bowl, dropping off the cat tracks down into faces. And then they link up with the cat track, maybe 400 or 500 vertical meters below. So it's a really, as I said, it's a really compact, easy to ski around resort, but bags and bags of off-piste skiing. And I was very fortunate that once the kids were in place, we could just shoot off and have a couple of laps before and after lunch. And then even on the last day, I was skiing untracked boot top powder for top to bottom, working my way through, sometimes in the high open bowls and then down through the trees. And it was one of those resorts that didn't take a long while to work out. So it kind of sped up the exploration of it.
Nice. It sounds great. What altitude is the resort and topsail?
So there's a lodging accommodation area at 1500 meters, but it doesn't have lift access. It doesn't have run access. It just has the lift from the accommodations up into the main area, which is 1600 meters. And then in Pralu itself, it goes from 1600 meters to just over 2,500 meters. So a good 950 meters vertical. It's all ski in, ski out, or a very, very short walk to the lifts. Very convenient, and all levels of terrain going back to the mountain, back to the base. But also they've got a cable car kind of gondola sort of setup where the beginners, once they've gone on the two magic carpet areas at the base area, they can take that up rather than having to get on a chair. And then there is a sort of mid-station beginner area, green T-bar area. So that, and then if they don't quite ready to come down on the full blues or the full reds, then they can download on the cable car. So it's a really nice setup, very family oriented, but still bags of challenge and difficult terrain in and out of the trees.
You mentioned the trees quite a lot. I did have a look around their website, and I got the sense that maybe unlike some of, let's say, the Tarantais resorts, which are sort of packed a bit close together, you can see other resorts from each resort. This is right on the edge of a big national park. There's a sense from what I was reading that you feel like you're out there in nature.
Absolutely. Once you go around the corner or you take that first chair above the base area, you don't really see any sort of alpine as such accommodation. But when you get that next level to the top, you can see right down into the valley, and it seems like a very big distance and a very big span from where you are. So it's a fab, you do definitely feel. And then once you get over the top from Pralu into the other areas, there's no accommodation. It's just linked, valleys linked by lift. So there's no, you can't stay in the halfway point. You've got to go all the way over to the far end. So that middle section seems like ski mountaineering, heli ski, cat ski sort of terrain, but it's lift accessed. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and I think also I noticed on the website that it's a dark sky reserve, meaning you can get good view of the stars, which must mean there isn't, you know, much around in that area.
Very little light pollution, you know, just the lights of the actual accommodations where we were at 1600. And then even just walking out from, they've got this fantastic alpine roller coaster that's good in the day, but far better at night. So we went over for one nighttime activity with the students, and it sort of takes you to the top, and this winding, twisting track. And while you're on it, that's illuminated. But beyond that, you can see the stars when the sky was clear. So it's absolutely a dark sky reserve. And I'm sure if you went a little bit higher to dark or stayed up there and then came, waited for it some dark, you'd see a fabulous display of stars.
The resort name is Pralu. If I recall my O-level French, Lou means wolf, and the resort's logo is two wolves. So I'm guessing they're out there in the national park. Hopefully none of them around on the slopes or in the resort.
Yeah, we don't see them at all. So Pralu is Meadow of the Wolf, which is kind of a little bit of a, you know, doesn't do it justice because it's not meadow skipping. There's some serious terrain there. But obviously within the national park, they've got the meadows and the sections where the wolves would be. Yeah, so you don't see any of the wolves. They keep themselves to themselves. But around us, you see the smaller wildlife like ermine and mice, that sort of thing, on the tracks on the snow. And then there's a lot of bird life as well. They've got grouse, they've got ptarmigan. And if you're very, very lucky, but I think you'd have to be in that area away from the accommodation, you could even see golden eagle.
Nice. Well, Pralu, I'm going to put links into the show notes to that. I wonder if I could just ask you another question while we've got you on the line. You said you were with a school from Merthyr. I've been reading recently about a proposed new indoor ski slope there, which presumably would be quite exciting news for you. What do you think the chances are of that happening? Is that actually going ahead?
Well, there's just been a big announcement, and you know, it kind of was heartening when you see these kids from Merthyr, you know, learning to ski, and you'd like to think that somewhere down the line, possibly one or more of them could end up being an instructor. That's what the value of having these sort of school trips, to be able to go to expose children to the wonderful sport that we all know is skiing. The Riedekar West complex has been in planning for a number of years, and it's been sort of a ping pong match between the local Merthyr Council and the Welsh Government, but thankfully everything's been signed off now. It seems like they've got all the funding they need, which is private funding. They doesn't need any Welsh Development funding. I'm sure there'll be some sort of help down the line, so we're very, very optimistic that within a couple of years it'll be up and running, and that part of the world then will become a real hot spot for adventure sports and adventure travel, because we've already got Bike Park Wales there, which is attracting people from all over the country to come down. You've got the Brecon Beacons in My Valley, at the top end of My Valley, which links the Rhondda Valley with the Cynon Valley. You've got Zip World, which has got Zip World Tower, which has got these adventure things going on. And then only 40 minutes from there, and then you've got coasteering, surfing on the Welsh coast. Obviously, it's not Australia or Hawaii, but it's a multi-sport, multi-activity, year-round kind of thing going on, which will be great.
Another one of your roles you should take up, Mike, is being a spokesman for the Welsh Tourist Board as well. You're doing a great job there. That's brilliant. Thank you so much for that. We're actually just going to move towards the close of the podcast now. If you've enjoyed this episode, or even if you didn't like it, listener, I would love to know. You can leave a comment on Spotify, Instagram, or Facebook. Our handle is @theskipodcast, or drop me an email at theskipodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on WhatsApp for exclusive material released ahead of each podcast. Look in the show notes for that link. We have had some feedback since the last episode. LJ99 left a review on Apple Podcasts. Just the best ski and snow sports podcast going. Always listen to these and learn something new. Interviews and reports from around the world. Great back catalogue. So thanks very much for that, LJ. I really appreciate that. We haven't had any reviews on Apple Podcasts for a while, so that's great. We have had reviews elsewhere, such as on Spotify. Exomorph, don't know if I'm saying that correctly, said, enjoy the pod. Could you do an episode on what to do when you're bored with all the peace in your ski area? I can ski all the slopes in my local ski resorts, and I don't know how to keep on having fun. James, you must have skied every single slope in your local area. What would you recommend to someone like that?
What can I say, Ian? I have skied every single slope, but I don't get bored. Maybe try it blindfolded. I really have no idea.
Mike, got any thoughts on that at all?
Well, the obvious thing is to explore beyond the piste. I'm not sure where they're actually skiing, but take lessons, learn to ski. And then once you find that out, you know, a 100-kilometer resort becomes big enough for a lifetime.
That's great. Also had another comment from Ian Brown, avid listener of the podcast. Just finished the Sir Faust episode this morning. It's an area on our list we'd like to explore. He also goes on to say he listened to episode 292, says his wife is Slovak, and many families in Slovakia prefer to drive to Austria, as Jasna doesn't have the infrastructure to compare. It's a beautiful part of the world for sure, though. And if you want to go and tick the box, you will enjoy it. There are now 294 episodes of the Ski Podcast to catch up with. According to our analytics, 185 of those were listened to in the last week alone. So if you would like to get some insight into a particular destination or the latest kit, just go to skipodcast.com. Have a search around the tags and categories, and you're bound to find something of interest to listen to. I can also tell you that in the last week, the majority of our listeners were in the UK, around 20% in the States, and everyone else spread as far and wide as Saudi Arabia, Brazil, and Slovakia, which I'm guessing is probably Richard Beatty, my guest from last week. If you'd like to help the podcast, there are three things you can do. You can follow us or subscribe so you never miss an episode, including those Olympic specials that are going to be appearing over the next 2 weeks. You can give us a review on Apple Podcasts or leave a comment on Spotify. And if you're booking ski hire this winter, don't forget you can get an additional discount if you use the code SKIPODCAST when you book at insportrent.com, or simply take the link in the show notes for your discount to be automatically applied. Right. I would like to thank my guests today, James and Sinead. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ian.
Thanks a lot, Ian.
And Mike, thank you.
Always a pleasure to be on, and look forward to the next time.
I would like to thank Tyrol for sponsoring the podcast. And finally, listener, thank you for joining us wherever in the world you're listening right now. And until next time, goodbye.